Reading from Bridge of Birds, a novel of an ancient China that never was, by Barry Hugert. Chapter 23, Doctor Death.
The extraordinary effect of the tendrils of the great root leads to a basic assumption, and that is that the heart of power is indeed the ultimate healing agent in the whole world, said Master Li. The Duke of Qin would never hide such a thing in a treasure trove where he might have to cross all China to get to it. He would keep it with him, right next to his loathsome skin, and you and I are going to have to murder the bastard and take the root from his corpse.
We were passing once more through the shadow of Dragon's Pillow, where crows gathered to watch us and make rude comments.
Master Li, how are we going to murder a man who laughs at axes? I asked. We are going to experiment, dear boy. Our first order of business will be to find a deranged alchemist, which should not be very difficult. China, said Master Li, is overstocked with deranged alchemists.
In the city of Pingtu, Li Kao examined the faces of street vendors until he found an old lady with gossip written all over her.
A thousand pardons, adoptive daughter, but this humble one seeks an eminent scientist who may be living nearby, he said politely. He is a devout Taoist, somewhat seedy in appearance and rather wild of eye. And there is an excellent chance that his house is placed halfway between a cemetery and a slaughterhouse.
You seek Dr. Death, the old lady gasped, fearfully glancing toward a ramshackle house that teetered at the top of a hill. None but the criminally insane dare climb that path to his house of horrors, and few ever return.
He thanked her for the warning, and started briskly up the path.
Almost certainly a gross slander, Master Li said calmly. Ox, Taoists are guided by a rather peculiar blend of mysticisms. On the one hand, they exalt sages like Chuang Tzu, who taught that death and life, end and start, are no more disconcerting than the passage of night and day. But on the other hand, they engage in frantic quests for personal immortality. When a scientific genius becomes involved in the mystical mumbo-jumbo, the result is likely to be a lunatic whose quest for eternal life massacres everything in sight. But such poor souls wouldn't willingly harm a fly. Besides, he added, it's a perfect day for a visit to a house of horrors.
There I would agree with him. Trees in the cemetery sighed in the wind like a moan of mourners, and behind the slaughterhouse a dog howled horribly. Black clouds muttered dark spells above the mountains, and sulphurous lightning streaked the sky, and the ramshackle house upon the hill creaked and groaned in a rising gale that dripped with a thin, weeping rain. We walked through the open door into a room that was littered with carcasses, and where a little old man with a blood-stained beard was attempting to install a pig's heart into a man's cadaver, while cauldrons burped and kettles bubbled and seething vials emitted green and yellow vapors. Dr. Death sprinkled the heart with purple powder and made mystical gestures with his hands.
Beat! He commanded.
Nothing happened, so he tried yellow powder.
Beat! Beat! Beat!
He tried blue powder.
10,000 curses! Why won't you beat? He yelled.
And then he turned around.
Who you?
Asked Dr. Death.
My surname is Li, and my personal name is Kao, and there is a slight flaw in my character. And this is my esteemed client, Number 10 Ox, Master Li said with a polite bow.
Well, my surname is Lo, and my personal name is Chan, and I am rapidly losing patience with a corpse that absolutely refuses to be resurrected.
Dr. death yelled, and then his face and voice softened until he looked to be as gentle as a snowflake and as innocent as a banana.
"If I cannot resurrect a stubborn corpse, how can I hope to resurrect my beloved wife?"
he said softly. He turned toward a coffin that had been set up as a shrine, and tears trickled down his cheeks.
"She was not pretty, but she was the most wonderful wife in the world," he whispered. "Her name was Cheng Chao, and we were very poor, but she could make the most delicious meals from a handful of rice and the herbs that she picked in the woods. She sang beautiful songs to cheer me when I was depressed, and she sewed dresses for wealthy ladies to help pay for my studies. We were very happy together, and I know that we will be happy together again. Don't worry, my love. I'll have you out of that coffin in no time," he yelled.
He turned back to us.
"It's simply a matter of finding the purest ingredients, because I already have an infallible formula," he explained. "You use 10 pounds of peach fuzz."
10 pounds of tortoise hairs," said Master Lee.
10 pounds of plum skins.
10 pounds of rabbit horns.
10 pounds of membranes of living chickens.
1 large spoonful of mercury.
1 large spoonful of oleander juice.
2 large spoonfuls of arsenic oxide.
For the toxin generates the antitoxin.
And in death there is life, as in life there is death.
A colleague!
Dr. Death cried happily, and he wrapped Li Kao in a bloody embrace.
Tell me, venerable one, do you know of some better method? This one is bound to work sooner or later, but it has been such a very long time, and I fear that my dear wife is growing weary of her coffin.
Alas, I am only aware of the classic formula, Master Li sighed. My own specialty is the elixir of life, but I foolishly left home without an adequate supply, which is why I have come to you.
But how fortunate! I have just made a fresh batch.
Dr. Death rummaged in a drawer and pulled out a greasy vial that was filled with thick purple liquid.
1 spoonful after each meal and 2 at bedtime, and you will surely live forever, he said. I need scarcely mention to a colleague that the elixir of life can occasionally have distressing side effects, and that it is best to try it first on a rat.
Or a cat, said Master Lee.
Or a crow.
Or a cow.
And if you happen to have a useless hippopotamus...
Actually, I was planning to try it on an elephant, said Master Lee.
A wise decision, Dr. Death said approvingly.
A small donation, Master Lee said, piling gold coins on a table between somebody's lymph glands and lungs. May I suggest that you employ a professional grave robber? Digging up corpses can be terribly hard work. Dr. Death looked down at the gold with a strange expression on his face, and his voice was so soft that I barely heard him. Once there was a poor scholar who needed to buy books, but he had no money, he whispered. He sold everything he had to buy a tiny piece of gold, which he concealed in the hollow handle of an alchemist's ladle. And then he went to the house of a rich man and pretended to turn lead into gold. The rich man gave him money so that he could learn how to turn large pieces of lead into gold, and the scholar happily ran to the city to buy the books that he needed. When he returned, he discovered that thieves had broken into his house. They had heard that he knew how to make gold, so they had tortured his wife to make her tell where he had hidden it. She was barely alive. He held her in his arms and wept.
and she looked at him, but she did not know him. "But, gentlemen," she whispered, "surely you do not mean to kill me? My husband is a brilliant scientist, and a dear, sweet, kindly man. But he needs someone to look after him. What will he do when I am gone?" And then she died.
Dr. Death turned to the coffin and shouted, "Don't worry, my love! Now I can afford to buy a better grade of corpses, and—"
He clapped a hand to his mouth. "Oh, dear!" he gasped, and he turned and trotted over to the cadaver on the table. "I did not mean to offend you," he said contritely. "I'm sure that you will do splendidly, and perhaps it would help if you realized how important it is. You see, my wife was not pretty, but she was the most wonderful wife in the world. Her name was Chang Zhao, and we were very poor. But she could make the most delicious meals from a handful of rice."
He had forgotten that we existed, and we tiptoed out and started down the hill in the rain. Li Kao had been quite serious about trying the elixir of life on an elephant. At the bottom of the hill was a poor old beast that was used to haul logs to the sawmill, and its master was not kind. There were cruel goad marks on the elephant's shoulders, and it was nearly starved. We climbed the fence, and Li Kao put one tiny drop of the elixir on the tip of his knife blade.
"Do you consent?" he asked softly.
The elephant's sorrowful eyes were more eloquent than words. "For the love of Buddha," they said, "release me from the misery and return me to the great wheel of transmigrations."
"So be it," said Master Li.
He gently pressed the blade against an open wound. The elephant looked surprised for an instant. Then it hiccuped, hopped high into the air, landed on its back with a mighty crash, turned blue, and peacefully expired. We raised reverent eyes to the House of Horrors. "Genius!" we cried. And the thin rain wept softly, and an old, cracked, crazy voice drifted upon the cold wind. "In front of our window are the banana trees we planted. Their green shadows fill the yard. Their green shadows fill the yard. Their leaves unfold and fold as if they wish to bear their feelings. Sadly reclining upon my pillow, deep in the night I listen to the rain, dripping on the leaves, dripping on the leaves. That she can't hear that sound again is breaking my heart." I decided that the oceans had been formed from tears. And when I thought of the tears that had been shed and the hearts that had been broken to serve the greed of the Duke of Qin, I was delighted that we were going after him with mayhem on our minds. We caught up with the Duke in Tsingtao, where he was staying at the palace of an enormously wealthy woman whose oldest son served as the Duke's provincial governor. And with lavish bribes, Li Kao arranged for us to slip past the guards one night. My heart was in my mouth as I grabbed the vines and began to climb. But then the breeze shifted, and an unmistakable fragrance reached my nostrils. I quivered all over. "Lotus Cloud," I panted. "Master Li, my heart will break if I don't see her." Under the circumstances, there was little that he could do except swear and box my ears as I swung rapidly across the vines. When I lifted my head over the windowsill, I saw that Lotus Cloud was all alone. But then my joy turned to ashes.
"What's wrong with you?" Master Li whispered. "I forgot to bring my pearls and jade," I said miserably.
Li Kao sighed and fished in his pockets. At first he found only diamonds and emeralds, which didn't interest Lotus Cloud at all. but finally he came up with a pearl that he had saved because of its rarity, jet black, with one small white flaw in the shape of a star. I would have preferred a ton of the stuff, but it was the symbol that mattered. So I leaned over and rolled the pearl across the floor toward my beloved's feet. Soon she will see it, I thought. She will look up and grin and yell, "Boopsie!" and all my cares will vanish. She looked up all right, but not at me.
"Fear not, my turtle dove," some lout bellowed. "Your beloved Poo-Poo approaches with yet another 100 pounds of pearls and jade."
The door crashed open, and the provincial governor staggered inside with an armload of loot, which he dumped upon my black pearl. I sighed and sadly climbed back down the vines.
"Poo-Poo?" said Master Lee. "Poo-Poo? Ox, it may be none of my business, but I must strongly advise you against getting involved with women who call their lovers Boopsie, Woofie, and Poo-Poo."
"She likes to keep pets," I explained.
"So I have noticed," he said. "Thank heaven she doesn't keep all of you in the same kennel. The noise at feeding time would be deafening. And now, if you have no objection, I suggest that we return to the matter of disposing of the Duke and getting that ginseng root."
I climbed rapidly to the Duke's window and cautiously raised my eyes above the sill. The Duke of Qin was all alone in the room, seated upon a stool in front of a desk. Candlelight glinted upon his great golden tiger mask, and the feathers in his cloak shimmered like silver. But his gold-mesh gloves lay upon the desk, and his surprisingly small hands were bare as he added up on an abacus the amount of treasure that his tax trip had accumulated. Li Cao's eyes glistened as he looked at the Duke's bare fingers.
"He lives for money, so he can die for money," he whispered.
He reached into his pocket and pulled out the most valuable of his diamonds. The moon was very bright. Part of the vines were wild rose, which I had been careful to avoid because of the thorns, and he found a sharp cluster just below the windowsill. Li Cao placed the diamond in the center and turned it this way and that until the moonbeams caused it to explode with blue-white brilliance. And then he doused the thorns with the vial of the elixir of life. I slid back until we were concealed behind vines, and Li Cao began scratching the stone wall with his dagger, a very annoying sound. For some time we heard only the click of the beads as they slid rapidly over the strings of the abacus. But then a table scraped against the floor as it slid back, and heavy footsteps approached the window. I held my breath. The terrible tiger mask leaned out and peered down, and the diamond was sparkling like cold fire. The bare fingers hovered like a hawk, and then they pounced. I could clearly see punctures. At a modest estimate, the Duke of Qin had received enough elixir of life to assassinate all of China and half of Korea and Japan, and I waited for him to topple over and turn blue. Instead, he lifted the gem to the eye slits in the mask and turned it appreciatively, and the metal voice that oozed through the mouthpiece held a definite note of pleasure.
"Cold," whispered the Duke of Qin. "Cold, cold, cold."
I was so stunned that I forgot to hold on to the vines, and we plunged 40 feet before I managed to grab them again and break our fall. Unfortunately, we were then dangling about 10 feet above the heads of some soldiers who were leaning against the wall, swapping war lies.
"Wait for a cloud," Master Lee whispered.
It seemed forever, but eventually a black cloud covered the moon, and I swung over the vines to the nearest window and crawled into a room that was pitch black.
The darkness vibrated with heavy snores. Li Kao slipped off my back and tiptoed across the floor and cracked the door open. He closed it hurriedly. "Soldiers guarding the halls," he whispered. We started back toward the window and froze. That damned cloud decided to move away from the moon, and we were pinned in bright yellow beams, and the snores stopped suddenly, and a grotesque figure sat up in bed and leveled a gangrened finger.
"What have you done with that ginseng root?" roared the ancestress.